Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description.
So, Kellen, I've been really worried about the political sphere, right? Everything in the U.S. happening politically. Then I found out about this great new paper that came out that really should just give us all so much hope. It's called Project 2025. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, we talk so often about how, like, nothing's going to steer us away from collapse. And yet, finally, we've found the answer. The plan to make it all right.
The solution.
Yeah.
It's hard to say it with a straight face. April Fools. This is, as we've, you know, we knew it was bad, and I had done some basic research on it and watched some videos and stuff. But as you actually get into Project 2025, the mandate for leadership by the Heritage Foundation, it truly just becomes terrifying. And I feel kind of bad even making light to start the episode, even just pretending like it could somehow be a positive, because it really is atrocious and is going to, if it were enacted, if it were carried out, even in a small degree, could lead to the loss of rights for a lot of people who have fought very hard to gain rights, and will lead the U.S. further and further down this steep slope away from democracy.
Yeah, it's extremely alarming, and we don't want to be alarmist about it. I think there are some who have taken a very alarmist approach to it. There's no guarantee that everything in here would be enacted if Trump was elected as president. But it's at least a very bold statement of intentions. And I think before we dive into it, we should just back up a little bit, because there may be some who don't really know much about it or don't know what it is. So generally speaking, it's a plan that has been put together by a collection of conservative groups. And it's called Project 2025 because, you know, at the end of this election cycle, when the new president is elected, they will be elected in November, but they will be sworn in January of 2025. Meaning, hey, as soon as 2025 comes around and we have a new president in place, this group is saying, assuming that's a Republican president, here is how we want to hit the ground running. And that's a lot of what the language is about. Like, hey, we have to plan now. We need to hit the ground running. In fact, if you go onto the website, Project 2025, you'll see statements like, for conservatives to have a fighting chance to take on the administrative state and reform our federal government, the work must start now. The entirety of this effort is to support the next conservative president, whoever he or she may be. And so this isn't something that just barely released this week. This is something I think that they were even starting to publish in 2022. But it's funded by the Heritage Foundation, the Koch brothers, And many other far-right organizations and entities. It is very well-funded. If you don't know what the Heritage Foundation is, it's come up when we've talked in bonus episodes in the past. But they're basically the most powerful conservative think tank and lobby group that exists. So very well-funded. And what they've been doing is they've been publishing this plan, and we're going to talk about the details of it. But usually when you think about any sort of a political plan, you would think of very muted, dull language. But this is very strong and very direct and very scary for those that have actually taken a look at it.
Yeah, you would also think if, you know, if there was this aim at taking over politics, at decreasing democracy and increasing authoritarianism and that type of thing, that it would, you would be kind of subtle about it and try and, like, you'd have to be, you couldn't be too bold, because if you were too bold, you'd get called out for it. People would see through it. But that is not the case here, right? They are just boldly stating, like, here is what we are aiming to accomplish. Here's all the cruddy stuff that we want to do. And, like, without trying to hide it, they're just being straightforward and saying, here's all the ways in which we want to enact more authoritarianism in the U.S., basically. They don't use the word authoritarianism, but it's still all right there to be seen very plainly.
And from the start of our podcast, we've committed to not being very political. Like, we've talked about the concerning state of politics in general and the direction that we're headed, but we try not to take, like, strong stances one way or another. You know, I'm somebody personally that I don't consider myself a Republican and I don't consider myself a Democrat. And that might seem like kind of a cop out. I can't find a way to align fully with what I see on either side. But it's interesting because there's a video that was where somebody was kind of doing a synopsis of Project 2025. And I went and looked at the comments, you know, and people were saying things like, this is so scary. Project 2025 is like The Handmaid's Tale. How do I leave? I don't want to be here anymore. I'm terrified, blah, blah, blah. But a lot of the comments sounded like this. This comment says, ugh, I don't want Joe in office, but I definitely do not want Project 2025 more. And then the next comment says, again, we have to pick between the lesser of two evils. With Joe, we buy more time to strategize. Another person says, I may not fully like Biden, but a vote or no vote against allows Project 2025 to win, putting many of my loved ones and myself in danger and preventing any potential progressive changes in the future. Like, just comment after comment, people are basically saying, I don't want Joe Biden to be president again. But, like, that seems so much better than the alternative, particularly when looking at what's being talked about with Project 2025. And so, like, why are we taking the time to talk about this? Because this would have a huge impact, right? Policies, how the U.S. government responds or doesn't respond to how things are taking place right now would have a huge impact on how we either mitigate the effects of collapse or, like, we really dive fully headfirst into it.
I think that's a great thing to point out. We're not doing this as, like, a full endorsement for the Democratic Party or an endorsement at all of the Democratic Party and saying you should vote for Joe Biden in the upcoming election. Because, yeah, I feel the same way. You said, you know, we try not to be political and agree with one side or the other. This episode is not us saying that the Democrats are doing everything right or that Joe Biden is a good president. This episode is us saying Donald Trump is, or the GOP in general, is a danger to the nation and to our freedom and our democracy, should the stuff that is talked about in Project 2025 come to fruition. So on that note, recently, since Donald Trump became president in 2016, we did sort of begin to see sort of the backsliding of democracy. As a matter of fact, in 2018, the U.S. was downgraded to a flawed democracy by the Economist Intelligence Unit in its annual Democracy Index report by Freedom House, there was another institute, the Brookings Institute, in 2023, pointed to two factors in American democratic decline: election manipulation and executive overreach. It also pointed to a decline in non-governmental institutions critical to a healthy public sphere, including an independent media, a thriving education system, and an engaged civil society as symptoms of democratic backsliding. So there's been sort of this trend in recent years. This isn't something that's like brand new with this Project 2025 paper. The Heritage Foundation for decades has been sort of writing these books and these papers on policies and what they believe should take place. We're just in more of a place now as a nation for these things to be fully embraced. We have had presidents in the past, both conservative and liberal, who have sort of taken upon themselves willingness sort of to play the part to carry out the atrocities, right, to play the game and all those things. But it feels like now more than ever, we are in danger of a larger backslide into authoritarianism as our leaders become more populist, right? As our people become more and more divided, as things become more tense, there's more polarization. It feels like that opportunity now to really hurt the U.S., to hurt ourselves through this type of thing is much more possible than it's ever been in the past. And so just knowing that those things are already happening, it just kind of shows that we're ripe for something like this, which we are about to now dive into, to take place and do its damage.
Yeah, well said. So let's dive in just a little bit. And here's where I think we can add some value, Corey, because people are talking about 2025. And so it's like, why in the context of collapse should we be mentioning this and talking about it? And how can we help people understand it better? And on the one hand, I think there's a lot of people that are hearing other people say stuff about Project 2025 without really knowing what it is or what it entails or what it even sounds like. And so I think it'd be worth just starting by sharing some of the direct statements, some of the language that's in there, and then we can break down like what exactly that means. So first of all, Project 2025, if you know, go to their website, which is project2025.org, then you will see that they have four pillars. And they talk about these four pillars. The first one is a policy agenda. Next one is personnel, and then training, and then a 180-day playbook. So, you know, one thing that we will talk about is there is a plan to remove many people from the government and replace them with people that are more supportive of conservative ideology.
And in many cases, not just conservative ideology, but far-right ideology.
Correct. So, you know, there's even a tab right at the top of their website that says personnel. When you click on it, it says Presidential Personnel Database. Want to be considered for positions in a presidential administration? Submit your resume today to be included in the personnel database. Right, they're trying to collect this whole database of people who are saying, like, I'm fully committed to what you're doing here.
I believe that in their own words, they said something like they wanted to build an army of conservative employees, basically.
Yeah, in fact, Paul Danz, who is the director of the 2025 Presidential Transition Project, basically, Project 2025 is headed up by Paul Danz. He said this in a statement where he was kind of talking about what they're trying to do. He said, what we're doing is systematically preparing to march into office and bring a new army of aligned, trained, and essentially weaponized conservatives ready to do battle against the deep state.
And I think right there, the deep state is sort of, I know you said you were going to read some more stuff from it, but the deep state is kind of the crux of this whole thing with the Heritage Foundation, which, by the way, the deep state is a conspiracy theory, basically, in which the GOP conservatives say that all the career positions in the White House or in the government are being held by the woke left, whose sole purpose is to make sure that no conservative agenda can ever take place. It's basically the evil left deep state is keeping any Republican president from being successful. And so they have this sort of vendetta where they create this false enemy, this them, that they have to vanquish. And that allows them to use language like bringing a weaponized army of conservatives into the White House. I believe it's 50,000 people that they're wanting to hire and train to bring in that first year of the GOP presidency to take over the government, basically.
Yeah, so I mentioned there's that personnel tab where you can go submit your resume, but then the next tab is a training tab in which, you know, it says Presidential Administration Academy, preparing political appointees to be ready on day one, and you can apply to enroll now, and you will learn what you need to learn. You know, you can be trained as part of this army on day one. And I think you mentioned just briefly the language that's used. That one sentence from Paul Danz, as he's kind of sharing what they're trying to do, you'll notice he says, bring a new army, preparing to march into office, weaponized conservatives, ready to do battle, right? Like, it's very militant in its language. And I think when you actually get into the documentation they provide, you see that they're not holding anything back. They're not trying to be subtle. All right. So a big part of this is the policy itself. And they've got what they call Mandate for Leadership, the Conservative Promise, where they outline their entire plan.
In like a 1,000-page document.
A 920-page PDF. I have it downloaded.
And you've read the whole thing three times. It's a little light reading before bed.
I have not read the whole thing, although I did read the first 50 pages.
Okay.
And once you reach page 50 in the PDF, that's when you're done with like the foreword.
Oh.
So that's when it actually starts.
Okay. So you read the foreword.
Yes. But in that first 50 pages, I did just find some really interesting comments that are made. And I wanted to pull a few of those out just to give a sample of what's being talked about in the Project 2025 policy.
Let's do it.
Okay. So first, I should just mention the framework here, that there's many authors that they pulled together to write these 920 pages. And they have these consensus recommendations, meaning they all agree that there are basically these four things that need to be done. Number one, restore the family as the centerpiece of American life and protect our children. Number two, dismantle the administrative state and return self-governance to the American people. Number three, defend our nation's sovereignty, borders, and bounty against global threats. And number four, secure our God-given individual rights to live freely, what our Constitution calls the blessings of liberty. So that's kind of the framework, how it's all set up. So I've just pulled, like, there's a lot that's talked about in each one of those, obviously. But even just from the foreword, I've pulled one paragraph from each of those sections. Okay, so section one, you ready for me to read this, Corey?
Let's do it.
It states, pornography manifested today in the omnipresent propagation of transgender ideology and sexualization of children, for instance, is not a political Gordian knot inextricably binding up disparate claims about free speech, property rights, sexual liberation, and child welfare. It has no claim to First Amendment protection. Its purveyors are child predators and misogynistic exploiters of women. Their product is as addictive as any illicit drug and as psychologically destructive as any crime. Pornography should be outlawed. The people who produce and distribute it should be imprisoned. Educators and public librarians who purvey it should be classed as registered sex offenders. And telecommunications and technology firms that facilitate its spread should be shuttered.
Wow. So, you know, that's one that gets talked about a lot. I think that's a huge fear with this. It's interesting to me that they mention pornography, and the very first thing they mention is transgenderism along with pornography, as if transgenderism itself is a form of pornography, right? And then they go in to say how anything portraying pornography should be illegal. It should be illegal. And then, I mean, some pretty harsh responses to those who show pornography, the media companies that show it, that display it, that share it, that propagate it. Librarians, you know, all sorts of stuff. Basically, they seem to be deciding what they feel is pornography, right? And if you can demonize any media outlet, any librarian or school or employee or whatever you want, based on the idea of what you call pornography, it gives you a lot of power. Second, how they say that it's not available, like it doesn't belong to free speech. I simply can't understand how that's possible. And third, again, with the transgender part, it sure seems to be giving them a way to say being transgender is not only morally wrong if they believe that, but illegal. And spreading or talking about LGBTQ rights become something that they can call illegal and completely ban.
And it's so interesting with all of this because, like, a lot of it, the general principles that they claim to stand behind, right? Like, do I think children should be protected? Absolutely. Right? And as a personal opinion, do I think society is maybe become too sexualized? Like, yeah, like, I think there's a lot of problems that are out there. But it is definitely used, like, in a very weaponized way to attack certain groups. And the irony to me here is that, like, with how fervently these individuals endorse a character like Trump,
right,
who has a very lengthy history of what's the right word? Like, if you're talking about someone who's misogynistic or a sexual predator or who has done terrible things to,
right,
has left a whole wake of destruction because of his,
proclivities, his, yeah.
Yeah. It's just ironic to me that they uphold not only Trump, but some of these other leading individuals in the GOP, that they just say, like, they put them on a pedestal and say, this is who we want leading us. And they talk so strongly against the very things that those individuals have, like, a clear history of doing.
Yeah. It's so clear to me that this is nothing more than, like I said, a way to choose who you want to punish and for what. Both on the LGBTQ side and demonizing that, but also just being able to say, I believe that you're a distributor of pornography because you talk about things that we don't like, and we classify that as pornography, and so therefore you are jailed, or your content is taken down, or your media platform no longer exists. It's a way to censor, and obviously, they won't follow those rules themselves. They get to choose who gets to abide by those rules and who don't. There was one thing here I wanted to read just in line with that. So this comes from something called the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. I quoted them a little bit earlier in the episode, and I'm going to do so again now. They like to use their thoughts mixed with the actual language of the Project 2025. So I'm going to read this. It says, "The plan calls on the next president to make the institutions of American civil society hard targets for woke culture warriors." That was a direct quote. To do so, it advocates, quote, "deleting the terms sexual orientation and gender identity, diversity, equity, and inclusion, gender equality, gender equity, gender awareness, gender sensitive, abortion, reproductive health, reproductive rights, and any other term used to deprive Americans of their First Amendment rights out of every federal rule, agency, regulation, contract, grant, regulation, and piece of legislation that exists." So basically, they're just saying we have to remove all of those words, any talk of that subject at all, take it out of everything, and it just can no longer be spoken of.
Yeah, and I'll share again, because I think it's important not only to, you know, it's one thing to know what people are saying about Project 2025, but it's I think even more important to know like what Project 2025 itself is saying. And this is directly from the document later on. They say that they want the president to, quote, rescind regulations prohibiting discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, transgender status, and sex characteristics. So
we should be able to discriminate is what they're saying.
Yes. And it's like, we're not even like, it's not a stretch to word it that way. They are directly saying we want the president to, quote, rescind regulations prohibiting the discrimination on the basis of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of language in here about that. And even just reading that first 50 pages, first of all, as a side note, there was a lot of mentions of Ronald Reagan. Like, he's just upheld as like...
He is God.
Yeah. But the one other word that I saw so frequently was the word woke.
Mm-hmm.
And like everything that is on the left is woke and needs to be eliminated. Okay. So that was one example. The next example, this is from that second part, right? Dismantle the administrative state, return self-governance to the American people. So it says this. Quote, the conservative promise lays out how to use many of these tools, including how to fire supposedly unfireable federal bureaucrats, how to shutter wasteful and corrupt bureaus and offices, how to muzzle woke propaganda at every level of government, how to restore the American people's constitutional authority over the administrative state, and how to save untold taxpayer dollars in the process. Finally, the president can restore public confidence and accountability to our most important government function of all, national defense. The American people desire a military full of highly skilled servicemen and women who can protect the homeland and our interests overseas. The next conservative president must end the left's social experimentation with the military, restore warfighting as its sole mission, and set defeating the threat of the Chinese Communist Party as its highest priority. Okay, there it is. Takeaways from that paragraph?
There's so much there. There's so much there. So I do recognize there's one particular oddity there that I think we hear throughout the paper, and that's that the number one threat to the U.S. is China.
Yes, that they state that very clearly in many instances.
And it's interesting because, well, I mean, there are lots of threats, right? Right now to the U.S. We talk about Russia, we talk about Iran, North Korea, all these different things, all these different places. And for whatever reason, Trump has always been good friends with other authoritarian leaders. But China gets to be the scapegoat, the one that is like our number one enemy. So that was one thing I picked out of that. Another is just this idea about firing the unfireable. It goes back to what we talked about earlier with the replacing, this bringing in this army of prepared conservative far-right thinkers to take over. And just something to mention here. So basically, you've got what they call the deep state. There's different types of government workers, right? Some are like career position government workers who have been there forever. They are there whether a Republican president is in place, a Democratic president. They may have been there for 30 or 40 years. It doesn't matter who's in office. Those people continue to hold those positions, and those positions are supposed to be apolitical. They're not supposed to pertain to a political party. The idea is to continue to run those organizations, the regulations that they're there to make sure that everything continues to function properly, and it doesn't matter who is president. And what Trump is, or excuse me, what Project 2025 is trying to say here is that that's the deep state, because they keep our president from doing the things that he wants to do. I've seen people say that the reason that Trump wasn't able to accomplish a lot of the terrible things that he may have wanted to do in his first term was because like, there's all of this bureaucratic stuff that keeps things working normally, and that one man, the president, doesn't get to just choose to change. And so the idea here then is to increase the president's power by replacing all of these career governmental workers with people who are loyal to him, so that when there is a change that needs to be made that he wants to make, that the people in those positions are specifically loyal to him, and those changes can more easily be made. And that's a terrifying thought, because that is a check and balance that we have intentionally in our government to keep things functioning properly. It is frustrating to me, it always has been, that everything is so bureaucratic and slow moving in our government, right? But this is one of the main reasons why it is that way, so that one person doesn't have the power to have too much influence.
And I think this is a good time to mention some of, you know, I'll just list a few, but there are many parts of the government that they want to just completely get rid of. Like, they want to defund the Department of Justice and get rid of the Department of Education, get rid of the Department of Commerce and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, get rid of the National Endowment for the Arts, get rid of the Commission on Civil Rights. They want to gut the EPA. They want to make drastic changes to the CDC.
Just like throw regulations out the window. And they claim, oh, but it's because A, we're going to save taxpayer money, and B, like, it's all just deep state crud anyway. This will just help the president get more done.
Yeah, and I, like, on the one hand, I mean, with everything we ever talk about, I always want to validate the points that are valid. Like, is our government spending out of control? I think absolutely. Like, we've got to find ways to get that under control. But what they're talking about here is very interesting, because they're picking enemies, right? Picking departments that they don't like and saying, let's just get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that. But then there's all this language about, like, we got to go in even harder on the military, right? And fund that even more, right? And make all these changes to make our military even that much stronger. And then, like you said, like, it's not necessarily that, hey, we just want to have a lot less government employees. No, we want to just remove all the ones we don't like and replace them with ones that will do whatever we say. So it's concerning, to say the least. Okay, so the third part, remember, defend our nation's sovereignty, borders, and bounty against global threats. I think you'll find this one particularly interesting, Corey.
Let's hear it.
I actually picked two paragraphs. I hope that's okay.
Read away.
Okay, this says, quote, cheap grace aptly describes the left's love affair with environmental extremism. Those who suffer most from the policies environmentalism would have us enact are the aged, poor, and vulnerable. It is not a political cause, but a pseudo-religion meant to baptize liberals' ruthless pursuit of absolute power in the holy water of environmental virtue. At its very heart, environmental extremism is decidedly anti-human. Stewardship and conservation are supplanted by population control and economic regression. Environmental ideologues would ban the fuels that run almost all of the world's cars, planes, factories, farms, and electricity grids, abandoning confidence in human resilience and creativity in responding to the challenges of the future. Would raise impediments to the most meaningful human activities. They would stand human affairs on their head, regarding human activity itself as fundamentally a threat to be sacrificed to the God of nature. That's paragraph one. Any comments?
I have many. Let's read paragraph two.
America's vast reserves of oil and natural gas are not an environmental problem.
Thank heavens.
They are the lifeblood of economic growth. American dominance of the global energy market would be a good thing for the world, and more importantly, for we the people. It's not just about jobs, even though unleashing domestic energy production would create millions of them. It's not just about higher wages for workers who didn't go to college, though they would receive the raises they have missed out on for two generations. Full-spectrum strategic energy dominance would facilitate the reinvigoration of America's entire industrial and manufacturing sector as we disentangle our, sorry, as we disentangle our economy from China. All right, thoughts?
Yeah, so any efforts to curb climate change, to slow fossil fuel growth, like, we're already failing, but the point here they're making is we are absolutely going to just do away with, like, any effort. And as a matter of fact, we're going to put all of our effort into fossil fuels and surging forward. They call the EPA a coercive agency full of embedded activists. The Department of Energy says they should end the unprovoked war on fossil fuels, restore America's energy independence, oppose eyesore windmills built at taxpayer expense, and respect the right of Americans to buy and drive cars of their own choosing rather than try to force them into electric vehicles and eventually out of the driver's seat altogether in favor of self-driving robots. Yeah, they're just saying straight up, and they actually do say that climate change is not real. Right, they will deny outright climate change and just say this is all an effort for Democrats to keep power and to oppress.
Which, by the way, the first time I heard of the Heritage Foundation, it was because a very dear family member of mine learned that, Corey, you and I do this podcast, listened to it a little bit, and said, "Oh, hold on. I think you guys have it wrong. You should go listen to this," which was a YouTube video from the Heritage Foundation all about how things are actually way better now than ever before as we've been burning fossil fuels. And the more we burn, the better things get, not only for the economy, but for even the environment.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah. Like that anything that says it's bad is actually all lies.
Well, I don't know if you're getting to this at some point, but I know that it also talks about how they want to pull us out of a lot of international treaties and organizations. They do not view those as helpful, and one of those is like the WHO, right? United Nations. I mean, pull us out of the United Nations. Like, it's just it's unbelievable. But the reason I bring that up is because we have this global sort of movement towards trying to solve climate change, right? And while you and I have our doubts about the effectiveness of those organizations and whether or not they'll work, they need to. And it's the first step towards making changes is to actually have those organizations to make those goals in the first place. But to outright just say we are ending that, we're leaving that, we are declaring that we no longer care at all about trying to curb fossil fuel use, about trying to care about the planet in any way, like full steam ahead. What a disaster that would be for climate change efforts.
Well, yeah, Corey. I mean, it's a pseudo-religion meant to baptize liberals' ruthless pursuit of absolute power in the holy water of environmental virtue.
Yeah.
Okay, let me share just one more. So, Section 4, secure our God-given individual rights to live freely, what our Constitution calls the blessings of liberty. This one isn't necessarily like a specific policy thing, but I just found it as an interesting paragraph. It says this, quote, "We see the same corruption expressed on an individual level whenever billionaire climate activists who want to outlaw carbon-fueled transportation fly to A-list conferences on their private jets. Or when COVID-19 shutdown politicians like former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and California Governor Gavin Newsom were caught at the hair salon or dining at fancy restaurants after moralizing about how everyone else must stay home and forgo such luxuries during the pandemic. For socialists, who are almost always well-to-do, socialism is not a means of equalizing outcomes, but a means of accumulating power. They never get around to helping anyone else."
Well, it's interesting. It goes back to sort of what you said before about how the people who are writing this, calling for having these perfect families, right, for the end of pornography and all this stuff, are in so many ways, the worst of the perpetrators in those areas, right? You hear often about how some of the most anti-LGBTQ politicians get caught having, like, looked at gay porn or messaging, you know, other boys or whatever it is. Like, they get caught in engaging in homosexual activity and oftentimes in illegal ways with minors or other things like that. And it just raises this question of, like, again, why are you railing so harshly against it when you're engaging in it yourself? And yeah, there's hypocrisy abounds on the left, on the right, Democrats, Republicans. It doesn't matter. The hypocrisy is there. That's how it works in politics. And it's terrible and disgusting, but it's just as ironic for them to point that out about Democrats when there's so many instances and cases of it happening themselves. This is reading through this, you hear other people say this, and the vibe certainly comes across. It's a Christian nationalist agenda. And Christian nationalism is terrifying to me, in large part because, again, of the hypocrisy of using a religion, of talking about how Christianity should be, like, there should be, I can't remember, I was reading something talking about how it talks about how Christianity should be privileged in the U.S. It should be upheld as the standard. And these people who are touting this, they're not living true Christianity, right? They're living this form of being able to say that they're Christians in order to gain superiority over someone else, which is not at the heart of Christianity at all.
Yeah, and to me, that's what's so frustrating about so much of this. And I keep kind of calling back to this, but, like, should we protect our children, which is what they're saying we should do? Absolutely, we should. But then they talk about what that means, and I'm like, that's not how I see it.
Right.
You know, and it's like, should we make our government more efficient? Absolutely. But then the way they talk about it is so alarming, right? Should we return to these, like, good American values and allow for, like, religious freedoms and other freedoms? Absolutely. But then what they talk about seems like the exact opposite of that. And so it bothers me so much. Maybe it's going back to just that idea of hypocrisy that you're stating, but that, like, we're going to stand behind this thing that sounds like such a good, virtuous thing. This is what we want to do. And I think that's how so many people get roped into this. They're like, yeah, like, they're talking about all the things that I want to happen in America. But then when you get into the details, it's like, oh, that's so despicable. And so, yeah, the what they plan to do here, we've talked about how they want to take so many people that are in any way opposing what they're trying to do, remove them from government, and pull in people who would support what they're trying to do. They want to defund or get rid of, like, almost every regulatory body. They want to make sure the next president, who they hope to be President Trump, would have, like, all this power and be able to make decisions without all these people getting in the way and all of the bureaucracy. They want to make sure our military is stronger than ever, and they want to make sure we definitely can take down China.
Which means that we have to, the military has to be straight, right? There cannot be any LGBTQ or transgender folk in the military, because that's a sign of weakness to them. We can't wokeify the military any longer. And this doesn't even cover everything. You know, we've talked about a lot of really strong points in Project 2025, but there are other things around what they want to do with education, right? You mentioned the DOE, but there's a lot that has to do with education and taking away woke ideology out of curriculums and giving the power back to parents to be able to teach what they want, and a lot of things about privatized school, oftentimes religious schools being paid from public monies and things like that. Women's health, abortion rights, immigration policies. Man, it is really tough on immigration, right? And we see that rhetoric all the time around immigration, and we see the lies and we see the hyperbole around around immigration. And I, Project 2025 is 100% that strong or stronger on saying we need to revoke access to immigrants. We don't want to, like, even like pulling back on helping people who are seeking asylum. It's very xenophobic. Racial equality, anything that has to do with social justice in any way is revoked, is challenged. So it's just, it's a very scary idea to me. It's a great example. Like, their future, of their idea of a perfect future is like my idea of an absolute dystopia.
So then the next question, we talked about how problematic and scary this all is. How much of this could they actually get across the line? And it, there's no like exact science on that to say like, oh, they could get this many of these things accomplished. But one thing is clear, and that's that they felt, and this has been expressed openly, they felt like they weren't able to take advantage of Trump's first presidency the way they wanted to. They were caught a bit flat-footed. There wasn't like full GOP support of Trump at the time. There wasn't, you know, as extremist of ideologies that were surfacing as there are now. But they want to make sure they don't waste a single second. And so that's where there's this whole 180-day plan, which is the fourth of their four pillars. We're not going to spend a lot of time diving into that right now, but they are very motivated to get as much of this across the line from day one. And even in the foreword, that first 50 pages that I talked about, they mention that like the most effective time to actually get anything done is when the president is first instated. And so there's a lot of energy there. And although like there are still checks and balances, what they're trying to do is eliminate a lot of those. And so I don't think anything is totally safe. Like we have to see this as a true threat and not just treat this lightly.
And along with that, I think maybe some people think, okay, this thing is called Project 2025. So if we can just get a Democrat, if Joe Biden can get elected again in November, then like we're safe from this. Well, okay, on one hand, we got to deal with Joe Biden and everything that comes with another term of his, right? But this article that I mentioned earlier from the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, they say, even if a Project 2025 favorite doesn't win in 2024, this plan will continue to drive the thinking of the far right into the future, and they will continue to push for these changes wherever possible. As a country, we can and we must reject the far right's efforts to lead us down the dark path away from an inclusive, vibrant democracy and toward authoritarianism. And I think like that's important to understand, right? Yeah, another, you know, if Biden becomes president or again wins another term, that's four more years, and that's four more years for Project 2030 or 2029, whatever it would be, to take shape, right, and to get more extreme, and for them to get more people in place. And we can't sit back and just say, oh, it's been solved because we voted. It's going to take more than that, and this thing is going to keep rolling and getting more and more extreme as long as people are becoming more and more polarized, which right now doesn't seem to be something that's going to reverse.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.